Today on Family Talk.
If God said there must be paths in the sea, I've got to find the paths in the sea. And so that verse he chewed on, he could not get rid of it, couldn't get it out of his system. And he looked and looked till he found the paths in the sea. And it was Matthew Maher who found that because he read it in the Bible that God says there are paths in the sea, and he literally believed it and applied it.
From paths in the sea to many of the inventions we have today, the Bible is loaded with so many amazing concepts and ideas. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to hear the conclusion of our conversation with David Barton, a well-known speaker and author who is also the founder of Wall Builders, a national pro-family organization that emphasizes America's moral, religious, and constitutional heritage. We ended part two of the program discussing how few people vote during elections and how uneducated many of the people who do vote are. David Barton shared the stunning statistic that a good portion of our elected officials, people who swear to serve and defend the Constitution of the United States, can't even name the three branches of government. It's just shocking. So today we're going to build on yesterday's conversation by talking about a phenomenal new resource that David Barton has created called the Founder's Bible. So here now is Dr. James Dobson, myself, and David Barton on this edition of Family Talk.
How can we long endure without a knowledge of government and our history and of the spiritual component to it that really was the foundation for it? Where are we headed?
Yeah.
You know, does that agitate you?
We're headed, I think, in a good direction, literally. And, you know, I mentioned that I'll address 600 groups a year. Well, I've got six guys on my staff, and we travel and speak. That means a lot of people are wanting to hear this stuff. You know, I would be really worried if we had all this information and nobody wanted to hear it. But people want to hear it. And I look at what happened on the New York Times bestselling list. I've had a book on the New York Times bestselling list on Thomas Jefferson. Glenn Beck had one on George Washington. Newt Gingrich had one on Valley Forge and Trenton. David McCullough had one on John Adams. People are willing to pay money to learn what they were supposed to learn in school. So you got people willing to go out and pay money to learn history that they were supposed to learn in school. That's a good sign.
Well, is you it, pay have money. You have you watched Waters Whirl on?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the O'Reilly That's show, right. Where he goes out and he talks to these kids on the beach.
They have no clue.
They have no clue.
That's right.
I heard one of them last week who thought Abraham Lincoln was our first president.
Exactly.
I mean, they're beyond stupid.
And see, we're paying on average $120,000 for their public school education, and they don't know anything when they get out. So we're blowing our money at a high rate. But people, now that they're becoming adults, are wanting to know. So I'm really encouraged by that. I'm really encouraged by the fact that it doesn't take that big a percentage to win. You know, in the American Revolution, we look at it and think, oh, they were all patriots. No. Only 25% of Americans supported the Revolution. 25% opposed the revolution, and 50% in the middle just wanted to be on the winning side, whoever that was. So the American Revolution, not only was it fought with only 25% support, only 8% of Americans actually participated in the revolution. So you won the American Revolution with only 8% of the people being on the field. That means it doesn't take a big majority to win. You just have to have dedicated people to go out and do something. The other thing that really I love, since Roe v. Wade, we've reached the highest number of pro-life percentage in America. I think it's 53%. We're now 53% pro-life, which that's the highest it's been since Roe v. Wade. Wow. Except when you look at teenagers. When you look at teenagers, only 19% of teenagers support abortion on demand. So my question is, how do teenagers get to be 20 points more pro-life than everything in the culture that teaches them? The 20 more points more pro-life than public schools, 20 points more pro-life than their parents, the whole culture of kids. So 20 years from now, when they're in office, abortion is not going to be an issue. They don't like abortion. And I can show you a lot of issues like that where the next generation coming up, it's amazing. I just
saw. They just have to revamp everything we've done, though. I mean, is it just going to be
we got to hold
tear
on for
down?
A while. Well, yes and no. But see, it's easy to tear down. I mean, we look at what President Obama has done.
In order to rebuild is what I mean.
We have to rebuild, but we have to tear down first.
Right.
I mean, what President Obama has done, we're going to have to get rid of that stuff. We're going to have to rebuild the right stuff. And it takes some education, but it doesn't take the whole nation being able to do it. It just takes a group of dedicated people. Mm. You know, I look in the last election, and a 5 million vote difference would have swung the election opposite direction away from Obama. We had 7 million evangelicals that voted for Obama. So all by themselves.
Let alone the millions and millions that didn't vote at all.
That's right. Yeah. So all I have to do is be able to get half of 5 million to think differently next election. You know, and that's a doable thing. I mean, we're only talking 2.5 million. We can switch the whole presidential election with 2.5 million thinking differently. Wow. Just half of that. So it's not an insurmountable feat. And I'm not talking about having a 100% agreement rate with the whole nation. I'm talking about being able to change policy. And I'm encouraged. We're really close in so many areas. Here's the best analogy I can think of. Christians, we are where we are with only 25% of Christians being on the playing field. So if you look at where we are in the culture, it's a toss-up where we are on abortion. Are we for or against it? Because national policy is split, and marriage is split, and all these things are split. But remember, if this is a football game and we're at halftime and we're tied at halftime, we've only had 1/4 of our team on the field. Mm. So we've had our 3 players playing, their 11 players, and we're tied at halftime. If the rest of our team shows up in the second half, we kick their tail. And that literally is what happens. If we get our guys to just show up, we don't even have a culture war anymore. So we have a culture war because we're playing with only 25% of the team. So that's why I'm encouraged.
That's not bad. He makes a good point. I've been discouraged for a while. I was at Summit Ministries, Dr. Jeff Myers, camp this week, and a girl said, you know, what areas in American culture do you think Christians ought to be involved in? And I looked at her, I said, every single one.
That's right. That's exactly
every
right.
One of them. You want to know why we're where we are today? Because we left large cultural areas with no entertainment, no politics, all these different areas that speak directly into how a nation survives and how it continues. You leave all of that, well, it's no wonder we're here.
Yeah. Well, I spoke at a Bible college and was telling these kids, you have got to get into every aspect of life. The earth is the Lord, the fullness thereof, you get in all of it. And after I was done, there was a kid who came up and just stood there and looked at me for a while. Didn't say anything. He just kept looking at me like, what's this all about? And he just kept looking at me. He said, you know, he said, when I was 5 years old, I had a dream in my heart that I was going to create computer games that would be Christian computer games. He said, 2 billion people a day play computer games. He said, when I told the people in my church, they said, oh, no, 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 that's secular stuff. You don't want to do that.
Exactly. And who would give him that advice?
Wait a minute. 2 billion people a day play computer. And if he has Christian computer games that are biblical for you, he says, I think that vision's alive again. God put that in my heart when I was a kid. And I think I can. And you go, yeah, you know, because God's put in the heart of these kids all sorts of stuff. And if we'll quit stamping out their vision and tell them to go get in every arena, they'll take it over. No doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind.
Well, I was talking to the kids again. And I said, you know, there is some good, quote unquote, Christian music out there. But it's always the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
When movies come out, a good Christian movie is the exception to the rule.
I said,
we worship the
Christian
God of creativity. Why do we put such bad stuff out? All the people that rip off other bands and t-shirt companies that rip off mainstream logos, you should be ashamed of yourselves.
Yep.
Use the creativity God gave you. Make something excellent. I like working with my dad because he has this standard of excellence.
That's right.
By the way, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to have a standard of excellence that high. But when you're done,
a great product comes out.
And you stand back and you go, I'm proud of that.
That's
I could show that to anyone.
That's right.
Because it's great stuff.
I'll tell you, bro. I look back in the American founding. Charles Wesley helped found Georgia in 1731, 1732. So one of the Wesley brothers, he's a hymn writer. He wrote 500 hymns, and the average hymn he wrote was 19 verses long. That was the average hymn, 19 verses. And so when I look at hymns written by Martin Luther and by these guys, and you look at the verses, man, you got hardcore doctrine in there. That's heavy stuff.
You mean they're not repeating the same phrase 40 times in one
man,
song and calling it a song?
We've got 4 words in a phrase. We repeat it 4 times, and that's worship.
My dad cannot stand that. It's uninspired.
Know, that was one of the objections at the Reformation was all the songs are chants. All we're doing is chanting. Hey, we're back to Christian chanting because we have so little knowledge of the Bible. We're back in the 1300s chanting our songs, and it's time to have creative music people actually have some content. It's time that the word good does go with the Christian film, like Cecil B. DeMille, you know, when that kind of stuff is good. You're right, Ryan. I mean, it's exactly it. Christians should have a higher quality. I built houses for a number of years. I finally got to the point where I would not use Christian subcontractors because they were the worst of all. George Barna points out that in all the tens of thousands of polls he's done, In 70 different moral categories, when they polled, they cannot find any substantial difference between Christians and non-Christians in 70 moral categories. Pornography, lying, adultery, divorce, you name it, can't find a difference between Christians and non-Christians. And if Christians don't change that—
It must grieve the heart of God.
Oh, you bet it does.
You experienced that, Dad, way, way back. I can say this now because no one's ever going to remember it. My parents had their floors and cabinets redone. They had them restained. And my mom's kind of picky about things like that. They came back and it was all black. I mean, it wasn't
painted black.
No, it was just stained.
He stained it and it turned blotchy black.
Oh, well.
And they just said, sorry.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you get, though. It's
I had to rip them all out.
But we meant
and
well.
And start over. I really did.
Yeah.
And it was a Christian organization. I hate to impugn the reputation of many Christians like my—
But we ought to have a higher standard of excellence.
And
we really ought to.
The
that's
board.
A witness.
It ought to be across the board that way. Yeah. It should be the exception, not the rule, that you have a Christian that's not high quality instead of the other way around.
I was talking again. I keep bringing Summit up because it had such a huge impact on my life. I mean, it absolutely had just. My parents can attest to that. I came home a different kid.
Yeah.
After 2 weeks
of Summit
at the Summit here in Colorado Springs, and I was telling the kids that be the anomaly.
Yeah.
Deal fairly. Charge a reasonable price. Have high quality in every dealing that you do. If you act that way, people are going to want to know why. Tell them it's because you're a believer.
That's right.
David, we've done several programs here together, and I've enjoyed every word that has come out of your mouth. And I thank God for the passion that you have to let the American people know where we came from. Because if you don't know where we came from, you don't know who we are. And so it's been a delight talking to you, but more than that, it's been inspirational. But I originally invited you here to talk about your book. And the title of it, one of them, you've written many, is The Founder's Bible, The Origin of the Dream of Freedom. And it's also includes in a New American Standard Bible. Now, I want people to know what this is because it's about a 20-pound book. And it is wonderful. It's filled with stories about our founding fathers and how they came to the conclusions that they drew that has blessed this nation for, 230 years or so. Describe what your motive was in writing this and what it's all about.
One of the things that happened in those years that we've been collecting documents, we still collect them, I studied the Bible a lot when I was a kid. I thought every Christian should know it. And so the Scripture says, Thy word have I hid in my heart. So I memorized a lot of Scriptures as a kid. And when I started reading the Founders' writings, and we have, again, thousands that are handwritten documents, George Washington.
You have a massive library.
We have 100,000 documents from before 1812. Wow. So I've got thousands of, George Washington and Franklin and Jefferson Adams, all those guys. And what's interesting is they quoted Bible verses like crazy, but they didn't put the references after it. See, today we have to say, John 3:16 says, for God so loved the world. Back then, they would just say, for God so loved the world, and everybody knew it was John 3:16. Hmm. And so the biblical literacy was so high, they didn't have to tell you it was out of the Bible. But as I read their letters, I saw Bible verses everywhere. And so I just started marking, said, that one's Jeremiah 1:7, and this is Isaiah 12:14. And so we just mark it. And a couple of years ago, Lottman Foundation's coming out with a reprint of the New American Standard. And I was asked to do the commentary on it. I said, you don't need my commentary. Here's what I'll do. I'll let the Founding Fathers comment on the Bible. And so we pulled out all these letters we've been marking for years and showed all the Bible verses the Founders used and how practical the Bible was. I mean, specifically, you have Alexander Hamilton and James Madison who point to a verse in Luke 11:20 as to why we have a written constitution. You have the father of American jurisprudence, James Kent, who points to 1 Samuel 7, verses 15 and 16, on why we have circuit courts today, because that's where they got circuit court system. You have John Adams, constitutional attorney, who said, we got separation of powers out of Jeremiah 17, 9. You read in the Constitution that bills of attainder, that's prohibited in Ezekiel 18, 20. There's so many things. I mean, when George Washington died, they had a 30-day period of mourning because in the Bible, when Moses died, they had a 30-day period of mourning. So we've kept that alive for national leaders. When a president dies, 30-day period of mourning. That's a biblical precept. So the Founding Fathers had so many Bible verses that were relevant and specific that we just took those and let the Founding Fathers comment on verse after verse of the Bible. So the Founders Bible has about 200 different stories in it, accounts. It deals with every subject we deal with today. The Founding Fathers dealt with abortion. The Founding Fathers dealt with homosexuality. The Founding Fathers dealt with the creation-evolution debate. That was not new to them. They're very outspoken on that. So all these things we deal with today, it's just letting the Founding Fathers use Bible verses to explain the same things we deal with.
This book would be a great read for today's kids. High schoolers can certainly comprehend these stories, right?
Oh, high schoolers can comprehend it, absolutely.
Yes, and maybe those younger.
And elementary kids can too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And certainly the ones that you choose for them. But there's such great stories in here. One of them involves a man named Matthew Maury. Tell us that story very quickly.
Matthew Maury is a ship captain. He's a sailor. He loved the sea. He had his own ships. He sailed most of his life. He grew up under Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. And one time while he was on shore, he was in a carriage accident. It crushed his leg, and he was never able to go back to sea. So here's a sailor all of his life. He loves the sea. He's a strong Christian man. And he ends up being known today as the father of oceanography. This is the guy that 200 years ago, without technology, satellites, anything else, he figured out that there are jet streams in the ocean. And that these jet streams will move you from place to place faster than just sailing the ocean. So there's a jet stream in the ocean that goes from here to Europe. There's one that comes from Europe back here, one that goes from here to Australia. All the continents are connected with these jet streams. And so he mapped this out. And I marvel that without technology, satellites, he figured out where these were. But what's cool is he tells us how he found out about them. And he says that he was doing his Bible reading, and in Psalm chapter 8, verses 6 through 8, let me just read you what he read. Psalm 8, verses 6 through 8. It says, Lord, you've made man ruler over the works of your hands. You've put everything under his feet, all flocks and herds and all the beasts of the field, all the birds of the air and all the fish of the sea and everything that swims through the paths of the sea. And so he was reading that, and he got that last part. He said, the paths of the sea? He said, wait a minute. I've seen paths over mountains. I've seen paths through valleys. I've never seen a path in the sea. A path through the sea. There's paths in the sea. Wow, I've never seen a path. But God says there's paths in the sea. If God said there must be paths in the sea, I've got to find the paths in the sea. And so that verse he chewed on, he could not get rid of it, couldn't get it out of his system. And he looked and looked till he found the paths in the sea. And so, you know, for kids, they've seen Finding Nemo and those, you know, the sea currents there that dude gets in and they swim. That's the paths in the sea. And it was Matthew Maury who found that because he read it in the Bible that God says there are paths in the sea, and he literally believed and applied it. So it's just a cool thing. There's so many of our inventions that came out of Bible verses.
You know, that reminds me of some of the scientific information that's in the Bible. We've all heard that Christopher Columbus discovered that the earth was round. Not so. Isaiah said, he sitteth above the orb of the earth.
That's right.
There it is.
There it is. There it is. And you know, Thomas Jefferson named what he considered to be the three most significant scientists in world history. And he named Newton, and he named Bacon. He went through. And people don't recognize that Newton, who really is called the father of modern science, was a theologian. He wrote more words on the Bible than he wrote on science. And even though we get optics and the laws of gravity and everything else from Newton, Newton was a big Bible guy, and you'll find that every major scientist who made major discoveries was a big Bible guy.
Yeah, but we got to separate.
Yeah. You know, religious people, you're anti-science.
Yes.
Yeah. No,
what,
we got to throw out Kepler and Bacon and Copernicus, and you have to throw out Gregory, and you'd have to throw out Planck and Kepler and all these. No, these were all devout Christians, and they keep pointing to the Bible. You know what? Charles Babbage is a great example. Born in 1791. In 1832, he designed the first computer. Now, no electricity, nothing. He designed the computer. So what happened was in 1991, on the 200th anniversary of his birth, the Royal Science Society in London took his design of a computer and built it, and the thing worked. It's a computer.
Wow.
And he designed it in 1832. So here's this great Christian guy who designed a computer before they even know electricity is available in that way. It's wild stuff what these guys do. It's wild stuff.
after all these years, David, when you said that you started studying the Bible when you were a child, you're still excited about it.
Oh, I love it. And you know what? One of the things about the Bible, John Quincy Adams wrote so much about the Bible. He's a president of the United States, sixth president, founding father. John Quincy Adams wrote so much about the Bible that in 1848, they took his writings in the Bible and compiled it into a book showing 10-year-old Americans how to read the Bible from cover to cover once a year. Now, as a president doing that book for 10-year-old Americans, and the founding fathers regularly read through the Bible once every year. And that's a practice every Christian should do. You should read the Bible cover to cover once a year. And a guy I love, founding father Elias Boudinot, who was the president of the Congress during the Revolution, signed the peace treaty in the Revolution. He helped frame the Bill of Rights. He's in the first Congress, first attorney admitted to the Supreme Court bar. When he's 77 years old, he founded the American Bible Society. So you have this founding father, founded, and the American Bible Society still gets out 250 million Bibles a year. He founded it. And so he is at 77, an older man, and he says, you know, he said, I've read through the Bible more than 50 times in my life. He says, and every time I read through it, I see things I have never seen before, which is the way the Bible is. Doesn't matter how many times you go through it. You keep finding brand new stuff every time. The Bible calls itself unsearchable. You'll never get to the bottom of what's in there. And so if Christians would make a commitment to read through this thing, and by the way, it's easy. That's only three chapters a day to read through the Bible in a year. That takes you 10 to 12 minutes a day. Anybody can do it. If you read through the Bible cover to cover once a year, and if you look at it being practical, like Matthew Murray did, don't look at it as being a spiritual book or a devotional book. It's a practical how-to-live book. If you look at it saying, I want something I can apply today, it'll change your life. And that's what we hope this Founders Bible will help people do. We specifically put articles in there that deal with things we deal with today so people see how practical it is on economics, finances. Jesus has two entire teachings on the capital gains tax. Jesus talks about the minimum wage. There's so many business things. Usury, all the interest, yeah. Exactly right. The Bible makes a big difference between progressive income taxes that we have now and capitation taxes, which the Founding Fathers put in the Constitution. I mean, all this is in the Bible. And people just don't know it today. So if people can get back into the Bible, that Founders Bible is designed to help them see how practical it is.
David, I want you to understand something. If you ever come near here, if you ever come to Colorado Springs or Denver or anywhere near here or anywhere you're willing to fly from, you have a standing invitation to come here and right. Talk about the passion of your heart, because we all need to hear it. Thank you for the energy that you and Cheryl put out to carry this message around the world. God is blessing you, and He has given you a mission and a message, and I'm grateful for it. And you have shared it with us these last few days. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Doc. Thanks, Ryan. Thank you guys for having us. We appreciate it.
Oh, what an amazing 3 days of programs we've had with David Barton here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and I hope that you didn't miss any of these broadcasts. But if you did, it's okay. We have all of them available online through our website, drjamesdobson.org, or via our Family Talk smartphone app, which is such a great app. If you'd like more information about David Barton or his book, The Founder's Bible, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. And if you enjoyed today's program, or if you didn't, join the conversation on Facebook by visiting our Family Talk Facebook page and commenting on the program or sharing a post about the broadcast. We love to know what you think about the content of our broadcasts, as well as what these programs mean to you. So log into Facebook today and search for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We look forward to connecting with you. God bless. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Meg Meeker for Family Talk, and I want to let you know about a very special offer that we have handpicked for you for the month of July. For every donation we receive this month, we will send you not only Dr. James Dobson's book, The New Strong-Willed Child, but also the corresponding DVD from the brand new Building a Family Legacy series. Both are yours when you give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org. Thank you for supporting us and for standing on behalf of families. And as always, thank you for listening to Family Talk. Who doesn't want to be encouraged to make their marriage stronger? Our new Family Talk iPhone app is designed especially to uplift your marriage in a way that makes it easy for both husbands and wives to find great resources. Loaded with articles, broadcasts, and videos, the new Family Talk app will provide you practical tips on making your marriage all it can be. The customized Family Talk app tailors content around where you are in life. Whether you're a husband, wife, dad, or mom, the Family Talk app will provide you with daily inspiration to strengthen your marriage and invest into the lives of your children. The app also allows you to set personal reminders around life's greatest priorities, your faith and family. Go to drjamesdobson.org/app. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today.